And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to this Thursday's edition of the 9 till noon show. It's approaching 5 minutes past nine on the 24th of October, 2024. Is it a 1 week today's Halloween, isn't it? I believe it is. Anyway, nothing to spook you too bad over the next 3 hours, we do hope. Just the usual mix of topics to keep you informed and entertained and engaged, we do hope. And you can stay engaged with us via our text and WhatsApp numbers, 086 60 25000. You can send your voice notes to that number if you wish as well. If you're outside the Republic, 00353 86 60 25000. If you want to give us a call, we always like to take your calls as well, 07491 25000. And you can email Highland you can email comments at highlandradio.com. And don't forget, if you are listening to the podcast, which is available from around about 12:30 every afternoon, or if you're listening to the overnight replay, obviously the live lines might not be opened, but you can email and we'll pick up those emails and carry them through to the next day. If you want to watch the show today, if you're at home, Smart TV, Fire Stick, we're on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. And take us wherever you are on that app or on Facebook and on X. The Tyrconnell Tribune this morning. Plans to rebuild the Creasler supermarket have been put on hold following an issue being raised with the proposed development by Transport Infrastructure Ireland. A decision on the proposal was expected by Donegal County Council this week, but the application lodged in April has now had its status changed to on hold, according to the council website. The shop was destroyed in the tragic explosion on October 7th, 22, where 10 people lost their lives and several others were injured. Vivo Shell Limited applied on April 18th last to the local authority to redevelop the site with a new building and forecourt layout. They sought the demolition of the existing building and construction of a new building that incorporates a Class 1 commercial building with shop, post office, off-licence store, deli, toilets, including accessible toilets, staff well facilities and a forecourt. Now, there's more details of that planning application and as to why it's on hold on the front of and inside the Tyrconnell Tribune today. The Donegal News, their lead story, a Ballybuffet couple who have tirelessly campaigned for surrogacy legislation are calling for no more delays in enacting change. Marie McPhillamy and her husband John are proud parents to Lucy, a fifth class pupil in Dewish National School, born to them through surrogacy, effectively. There's a medical term here that I'm not going to stumble across. In the eyes of the law, Mrs. McPhillamy is Lucy's guardian, not her mother, as it was her sister, Sharon, who gave birth to her. This has given rise to legal uncertainty in that the signing of consent forms for medical intervention, passport applications, and even the opening of a bank account for her daughter all currently have to be signed off by her husband. So the husband has sort of the legal parental rights, mum doesn't, which obviously you can imagine feels incomplete. There was fresh hope in June when the family travelled to Dáil Éireann for the formal passing of the last stage of the Health Assisted Human Reproduction Act 2024. The adopted bill was signed into law by President Higgins on July 2nd. But this law does not become operational until it's formally commenced by a commencement order, which again must be passed. This usually takes around 6 months, so they are in limbo there until such time as that is sorted. And it seems to be just procedural. The main hurdles seem to have been passed, and it just seems to be a procedural issue there. The Derry News, their lead story, also the university's vice-chancellor would support the increase of university tuition fees to over £9,000. Professor Paul Bartholomew stated his support for the idea while in conversation with Dr. William Crawley at Derry's Ulster University McGee campus. On to the Nationals now, and we'll start with the Irish Independent. And Gardaí will continue their excavation of an area of wasteland behind a house in Dundalk this morning in relation to the disappearance and suspected murder of Kyron Dernan, who's listed as 8 here, but very sadly, if he passed or has passed, as they suspect, we refer to him being as 8, but the tragedy is he never reached that age. A digger was transported to the site yesterday morning as the search resumed. The wasteland was accessed through the garden of a property behind the terraced house on Emer Terrace at the centre of the investigation. That rented house was Kieran's family home for a number of years until last May. The current occupants of the property and the occupants of the house behind it was used to access the wasteland. They're not connected in any way, shape or form to Kieran or his disappearance. Gardaí would not confirm whether the search of the garden of the house on Emer Terrace had been completed. Meanwhile, children are going missing every month, A2 leader Pádraig Tobin told The Dáil yesterday. Mr. Tobin said the state care system is broken and that children had been murdered in the past decade. Now, I'm not sure if what these figures relate to or those comments relate to, but as you would know, There's a 13, 14 or 15 year old or 16 year old that goes missing every single day in this country. I would know, and it's not always necessarily stated, I would know for a fact that a proportion of these go missing from foster care or care facilities, and they might go missing on more than one occasion. I'm not sure when we talk about missing children if that figure is included, because if it is, they're often, in fact, invariably, they're found a day or two later or two or three days later. Some can take a little longer, but all of the ones I've tracked where I know that to be the circumstances have been found and returned to whether it's their home or a foster parents or a care facility. So I'm not sure, and be interested maybe to find out if those are the people that A2 are referring to, or are there others? The majority of the Dáil votes to accept assisted dying report. Now, this is not effectively, well, I suppose you could say it's a paving stone in the way to paving this legislation, which many people are opposed to, and very few people I know seem to be actually too bothered about it. Being introduced. But anyway, the Dáil has voted by 76 to 53 to accept the assisted dying report after the three coalition parties allowed a free or conscious vote when it came before the Houses late last night. A number of government TDs oppose the legislation, but support from Sinn Féin, People Before Profit, which has championed the issue, as well as Labour and the Social Democrats, meant the report was accepted. So those that accepted it, the reason it was accepted is because Sinn Féin, People Before Profit and Labour and the Social Democrats voted in favour of it. Now, this doesn't mean that it's coming into law. This means that the Dáil accepted the report that was furnished before it. Former Minister Simon Coveney opposed, while Government Minister Peter Burke and Norma Foley were also among those who rejected the document. The final report of the Joint Directors Committee on Assisted Dying is based on sittings over 6 months, hearing from over 70 witnesses. The final report, issued in March with 38 recommendations, favours legislation for assisted dying in certain restricted circumstances. Now, the one thing we do know, that something can be voted for by the public with certain restricted circumstances, but then thereafter there's provision for those circumstances to be widened. So as it stands, the report has been accepted. It's worth noting that of the panel that were compiling that report, there were three, I believe it were three, who were involved in that opposed the report and outlined their reasons why. A Fine Gael spokesperson said that as the case for issues of conscience, Fine Gael TDs will have a free vote on this. This is a report of a committee as opposed to a vote on legislation. The party echoes the decision of Fianna Fáil, whose leader Micheál Martin said TDs would have a free vote on issues to do with life or issues to do with conscience. So what do you think? As I say, this isn't about bringing it in. This is effectively about accepting the report, even though there were those opposed it, those compiling the report. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. The Irish Daily Mail seems to want to confirm what we all know. Election will be held on Friday, the 25th of November. Simon Harris will call the general election on Friday, November 8th, for a polling day on November 29th, senior government sources have said. The Mail also understands that a short, sharp campaign is deemed by senior Fine Gael managers as the best vehicle for the party to reach a target of 45 seats. But sources in the party believe that as many as 50 seats might be achievable, with some saying we're going to party like it's 2007 and Trump back into power, just as Bertie Ahern's Fianna Fáil did. While Sinn Féin, stumbling from crisis to crisis, and its leader Mary Lou MacDonald refusing to conduct open press conferences, Sources across Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Green Party are making bullish predictions. One cabinet source said, "We're trying to limit this kind of talk, but our candidates and canvassers are reporting back that this campaign is very much like the 2007 one. That means there is very, very positive attitude around returning the government. Despite media attacks and controversy, Bertie Ahern romped home in 2007. Well, the government's not really facing the same sort of attacks and scrutiny that Bertie Ahern did. In fact, some of the coverage seems to be right quite purposely very, very favourable. But that's just an observation. It could be wrong, of course. The Irish Farmers Journal, unprotected area, could be banned from sale next year. Sorry, it's urea. Unprotected urea could be banned from sale next year under a radical plan agreed by an industry stakeholder group. Only protected urea should be available to Irish farmers from autumn next year. The Agriculture Water Quality Working Group has recommended to the government. The move represents a major shake-up of the fertiliser market, as unprotected urea still accounts for a large proportion of nitrogen sales. The minutes from a recent working group meeting seen by the Irish Farmers Journal stated that the prohibition on the use of unprotected urea would apply from the 15th of September 25. For additional areas, moving to a maximum derogation limit of 220 kilograms of organic nitrogen. This prohibition would apply from 1st of December 25, the minutes read. Now, just to be careful of some of the language in this next article, it's the continuing trial of Barbie Kardashian. And as I say, just it's only going to be brief, but some of the terminology or phraseology might offend some. A prison officer has told a court she was terrified when transgender inmate Barbie Kardashian told her she would rape her with an implement. I don't ever recall a situation in the past where we would find ourselves in a situation where a woman would threaten to rape a woman. But this is the situation as it seems to be now. Never ever heard of it before this trial. Roisin Linane told Kardashian's trial she feared for her safety after the accused allegedly issued the threat while she was an inmate on a landing at Limerick Prison that was being supervised by Miss Linane. Overall, I was shocked, terrified. I feared for my safety. I never feared a prisoner before, but in this case, I feared for my safety and feared about the prisoner's release date, Miss Linane told Limerick Circuit Criminal Court yesterday. Barbie Kardashian, 22, of no fixed abode, who it was heard was born a male but now identifies as a female and then ended up in a female's prison, denies three counts of making threats to kill or causing serious harm to Miss Linane on dates in April and June of 2023. That trial continues. We heard yesterday what it takes to effectively change legally what gender you might identify as. Lots of coverage of the Middle East in the papers today. Just note that it's sort of getting deeper and deeper into the papers. United Nations agencies have warned it could take 350 years for Gaza's battered economy to return to its precarious pre-war level due to the damage imposed by Israel's airstrikes and economic sanctions. Now, if that's not a wipeout, you'd wonder what actually is. 350 years for it to return to the way it was, and it wasn't fantastic prior to that. The UN Conference on Trade and Development said in a report released on Monday that rebuilding could take centuries, even if the war ends tomorrow. Before the war, Gaza was under an Israel and Egyptian blockade imposed after Hamas seized power in 2007. Four previous wars and provisions between Hamas and the Western-backed Pakistani Authority in the West Bank also took its toll on Gaza's economy. And of course, Lebanon is now being destroyed. And my next comment is not in any way hopefully insensitive or conflated, but I did read that it's estimated, and this is the level of destruction over there, bombing in built-up and urban areas, the estimate it would take €25 billion to rebuild Lebanon if it were all to stop now at €25 billion, which is a massive figure and doesn't account for the incredible loss of civilian life. But it did make me wonder how we spend our money here when a hospital is costing, you know, over €3 billion. But some estimates is that you could rebuild the ravaged Lebanon with €25 billion. On to the last paper of the day. It's the Irish Sun. A TD has called on the government to stop Norwegian fishing vessels plundering our mackerel stocks. We heard this locally as well from a councillor. Fianna Fáil's Christopher O'Sullivan urged lawmakers to address the harmful practice of overfishing of stocks of this important species and asked the EU to take urgent action. Speaking in the Dáil, O'Sullivan said, Norwegian vessels are plundering Irish mackerel stocks. They have, in conjunction with the UK and the Faroe Islands, set themselves massively inflated quotas for mackerel. Let me read that again. They have, in conjunction with the UK and the Faroe Islands, set themselves massively inflated quotas for mackerel. Faroe Islands and UK aren't even in the EU, and yet they're plundering our stocks. This has led to a situation where scientific advice is saying quotas should be reduced by 22%. But it is the Irish boats and the EU boats that are going to face the 22% reduction, which is crazy because the non-EU boats, they fish what they wish to fish. They look at the stocks and go, my God, these stocks are dwindling. We need to stop this fishing. But they really have only the power of the EU to cut it by 22%. And the 22% cut in mackerel quotas was recommended in a recent report by the International Council for the Exploration of the Sea. Ireland's small fishing fleet stands to lose over 10 million in 2025 from the cut. I mean, that's huge and would have massive ramifications. We might maybe speak to that TD if we don't have him already lined up, because I'd be very interested in teasing that out. That's a huge impact on the fishing economy, and I'm sure to be felt not least here in County Donegal. They're already struggling and under pressure, and it's like the death by a thousand cuts sometimes, it feels. Good morning, Dr. Matt Nicol, astrophysicist from Derry. How are you getting on? Good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's great to have you on. Now, you headed up a Queen's University Belfast team that has cracked not one, but two great mysteries concerning black holes. Before we get into that, what's a black hole?
Ooh, black hole is, it sounds very complicated, but I would say in some ways they're the simplest things in the universe. All they are, you take a lot of stuff and you cram it down really small. And at some point it gets so concentrated that the gravity's too strong for anything to escape. And then you got yourself a black hole.
And what have we discovered about black holes? And it sort of surrounds, does it not, the emitting of flashes from black holes. Is that correct?
Yeah, so what we found was from a big black hole in the center of another galaxy, we were looking at this with an X-ray telescope from NASA, and we found that every 48 hours or so, huge burst of X-rays comes out of the middle of this galaxy. So that was already a pretty crazy thing to find. We were quite taken aback when we saw the size of these bursts of X-rays. But what was even more impressive was that 5 years ago, we were looking at the same galaxy, and we actually saw it destroy a star. You know, this the same black hole tore a nearby star apart. So the two big mysteries, one was whether these X-ray bursts are connected to the destruction of a star a few years earlier, and the other mystery is what actually causes the X-ray bursts. So those were the two things that we then tried to understand from this black hole.
And what did you learn in that process then that really it goes even beyond that initial discovery?
So this has been a mystery for a few years. So about the same amount of time ago, about 5 years ago, people found in a few other galaxies, just a handful of galaxies, it's these similar kinds of X-ray bursts. And there was some speculation that they could be connected to stars getting destroyed by the black holes. So first of all, you know, just by the lucky coincidence of seeing these two things in the same galaxy, we proved that indeed there's some connection between black holes destroying stars and these mysterious X-ray bursts. But we think we then figured out what actually causes the bursts is when this black hole destroys the star. So you've got a black hole sitting here and the star's coming in from far away. And as it gets close, the star gets, you know, it gets stretched by the black hole's gravity and it gets torn apart. And eventually what happens is you've got a disk of leftover stellar material kind of going around this black hole. If you've ever seen the movie Interstellar, there's that nice picture of the black hole, there's this kind of disk of gas around it. That's exactly what you got here after the black hole destroys the star. And what we think causes the X-ray bursts is that there's another star that's just kind of minding its own business going around the black hole, not getting close enough to get destroyed. But once this disk of gas forms, all of a sudden your black hole, it's just orbiting, or your star's orbiting calmly around the black hole, starts colliding with it every time it goes around. So every time the star collides with this disk of gas, we get this flash of X-rays.
Wow. And when you talk about stars, right, and people look up and they see tiny little flecks of light, okay, but these are large objects.
Yes, I mean, there's only one star we can look up and sort of see how big it is, and that's our own sun. The sun's a pretty representative star, but this is, hundreds of times the size of the Earth across, and many, many, many times the mass of the Earth. So these are huge objects, like you say. They're not just little points of light. Every single one of them is absolutely enormous.
And other than sort of solving a mystery, beyond that, is there a usefulness to this information?
Yeah, so one big mystery we have, and trying to understand where everything in the universe comes from, one of the things we don't understand is how these black holes form in the centers of galaxies. And we think that nearly every galaxy has one. And without galaxies, you don't have stars, and without stars, we don't have life. So this is a really important part of understanding where we come from, how these galaxies and black holes form in the first place. And by this new technique of seeing these stars going around and colliding with these disks, we can learn how often stars get close to black holes, how many stars live in the centers of galaxies, and whether those stars are actually what feeds the black holes and grows them in the first place. So we hope that this can connect us back to the very early universe and how this all started to form.
Yeah, the universe contained within what?
Oh, we can only sort of see what's within our own observable
Because something
universe.
can't be formed from, oh, I don't know. Oh, this is too early for me. My head's starting to hurt. It's a remarkable math, isn't it, really? You know, the expanse of space and its origins and how it all operates. We know nothing really in the wider scale of things, as amazing these advances are, and it's fantastic to have a local angle on it. But we're just scratching the scratch on the scratch of the surface.
It's a big universe. There's a lot of stuff we still have to learn, but it's amazing how far we've come in the last 10, 20 years with modern telescopes and our computers now, how much we've managed to learn about where these things kind of come from.
When you look at
still
all the
very good.
different planets, stars, or I know there's different terminology for the different objects and such, but it's kind of naive of us. Would it be kind of naive of us to think that we are the only populated planet? So I'm just curious, as someone. Because, I mean, there's going to be planets everywhere with a sun, similar distance, water, air present, I don't know. But it would be incredibly, I don't know, not naive actually, but arrogant almost, to think that this is the only planet that life happened to happen upon.
I completely agree with you. Yeah, the observations seem to suggest that most stars have at least one planet around them. In our Milky Way alone, there's 200 billion stars, and in the universe, there's trillions of galaxies the size of the Milky Way. That's an unimaginable number of planets. There's absolutely no chance that we're the only ones with life on it. No chance at all, I would say.
And just separate to this as well, obviously, Elon Musk's in the news an awful lot. He's determined to make mankind multiplanetary. He sees, and the funny thing is if you every time you doubt him, he seems to do something that disproves that doubt. And the most recent return of a rocket, really quite remarkable. It looked like science fiction. You referenced a science fiction film earlier on. It was like science fiction in real life. Do you think he will achieve that? And do you see an advantage to that?
I mean, I find the rocket technology really impressive, and the rockets returning and landing is incredible. I think that our priority should be to look after this planet
Yeah,
first of
I
all,
hear you. That's my
before we start
feelings
trying to
too.
go to other ones. Because
Well, let's
even,
not go over there and decide to destroy somewhere else. Let's get
well,
this one in
indeed.
order.
Indeed. I mean, we're still a long way away from being able to go to planets around other stars. Right now, we can maybe just about get to the planets in our solar system. None of those are especially fun to live on, I would say. Mars is very cold, Venus is very hot. I don't want to go and live there. And we're probably a century away from being able to travel to another star. So for our lifetime, this is the only one we're going to have. So let's enjoy it. But I'm all for rocket technology and exploring the solar system, of
Yeah, for
course.
sure. Listen, it's amazing what you've achieved. Just as a astrophysicist, what's your day-to-day work, Matt? Is it all research, or how do you sort of apply yourself on a daily basis?
I mean, research is probably my favorite part of the job, but working in the university here at Queen's, there's lots of teaching as well. I enjoy teaching physics and astrophysics. We've got a lot of great researchers here too. I've got a lot of PhD students and other researchers working with me, so it's a lot of it's collaborating with others and trying to work together in these kinds of projects, and a lot of it's also just sitting at the computer, hitting your head off the screen, trying to figure things out. So it's quite a varied job, I would say.
Yeah, and your name and those of who worked on this, I mean, that's enshrined now. You know what I mean? These are proper advances in our understanding of space that will be reflected on, you know, obviously now after the fact, but in many, many generations to come. It's really quite remarkable and shouldn't be understated. Thank you so much for joining us, Matt, and well done. We really do appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Greg.
All right, take care of yourself and have a wonderful day. Right, that is Dr. Matt Nicol. He's an astrophysicist from Derry, and they have he's led that research, which fixed two, or found answers to two things that weren't known before. The black hole has a ring around it, and another star orbiting the same black hole crashes through the massive cloud ring petticoat that's created by another planet being stretched out and what have you. And this creates these cosmic flashes every 48 hours. All right, if that's your thing, if you're into space, you'll have enjoyed that. We're joined on the programme now by Irish Times security and crime editor Conor Lally. Conor, thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it.
Good morning, Greg.
Now, obviously, from a journalistic perspective, you are following what appears to be an awful tragic case surrounding Kyron Dernan, who's been missing for a long time now and presumed dead. A very sensitive story. One, people are tracking, but one, I think it's really important to report correctly, Conor. So I'll take your lead in that regard. So what do we know about this case, and bring us up to where we are right now?
Well, I suppose where we are right now is the centre of the case for the last few days has really focused on a house on Emer Terrace in Dundalk, County Louth. And this was the Dernan family home up until May earlier in the year. And while they moved out in May, Gardaí have now been searching that house for the last 3 days. And really they're looking for, you know, any evidence at all which might shed light on what happened to Kyron, when he was last alive, and perhaps where he is now or where his remains are now. So really over the last few days, what we've seen is an extensive search in the house, and the rear garden has also been excavated. That rear garden work appears to have been completed, and the Gardaí have now moved to there's a plot of kind of shared green space behind that terrace of houses. So the Gardaí have moved in there, and they're going to excavate and search that area throughout today and perhaps tomorrow as well. So really, because this is the last place that they know the Dernan family lived, and they believe Kyron also lived there, they're really trying to, you know, rule it out or as a possibility for finding any clues there. And that's really why they're spending so much time on it. So while that search is taking place, there's other investigations going on. Other people are being tracked down and spoken to. And Gardaí are really just trying to piece together a picture of Kyron's life. Really, I suppose, from the middle of 2022, because that was the last time he was last seen in primary school. So the Gardaí have been able to confirm that he was alive towards the end of the academic year in 2022. So that would be around May or June. And then really after that, they don't seem to have found any evidence that he was alive, certainly in that region of Ireland. So really that's where the inquiry is at the moment.
As you say, he was last known to be alive mid-2022. At that time, he and his mother were reported missing. But then fast forward to August of this year. Do we know what happened that has sort of sparked this investigation over concerns of Kyron's well-being?
Yeah, so if we look back at that period in 2022, May, June 2022, we know that he was in primary school in the Dundalk area at that time. Now, it appears that the primary school believed that the family may be relocating north of the border. So when Kyron didn't come back for school in the new academic year, it doesn't seem to have raised any flags the way that normally would, because the family had floated the idea that they were going to relocate across the border. So really, even though he wasn't seen again by the school, by anybody in the school after the end of the 2022 academic year, there was really then no Garda inquiry into him. And, you know, there was no investigation, it appears, at all as to his welfare or his whereabouts until August just gone. And what happened at that stage was TUSLA, the Child and Family Agency, had been dealing with the family. Now, it's important to say that Kyron wasn't in care or anything like that, but the family were in touch with TUSLA and they were dealing with the family. And as part of those ongoing contacts, Tuzla made contact with the family on the 29th of August, just gone. And Tuzla was inquiring as to Kieran's welfare and whereabouts. And somebody in the family told Tuzla that Kieran and his mom had left the family home in Dundalk just hours earlier on the 29th of August, and that they were unaccounted for. So Tuzla then went to the Gardaí and flagged its concerns for Kieran's welfare on the same day, 29th of August. And the following day then, a family member went to the Gardaí and essentially reported that Kieran and his mom were actually missing. So the Gardaí inquiry really only got underway then, and that was the first time that the flag was raised that there may be an issue around Kieran's welfare. So really in near 2.5 years, certainly 2 years and, you know, 3 months or so passed in between Kieran last being seen in primary school and Tuzla flagging its concerns with An Garda Síochána as to his welfare, and then an inquiry getting underway by the guards. So you've got that lost 2.5 year period, and that's the problem. The Gardaí are now trying to backtrack and trace exactly when Kieran was last seen alive, who was he with, where was he, and they really haven't been able to find any evidence of that so far.
And do you get the impression that the searches at the moment are located in that area because it's logical, or that it might be intelligence led?
No, I think it's probably logical. I mean, as I say, this was the Durden family home up until May of this year. And also Kieran is believed to have lived there for a period of time. So, it certainly appears to me that these searches are being carried out, as you say, just because it's an obvious place to start. It's an obvious, property to go into and do a really proper search there. Excavate the garden, you know, search the grass area out the back, excavate parts of that. So it seems to be an obvious area. The Gardaí, from what I can glean from Garda sources, now look, this all may change very quickly, mm-hmm. but certainly from what I can glean from Garda sources, they don't know how this boy was killed, where he was killed, or when. And even though
and can I say
it is
also,
a murder...
Can I also say just, yep. He may also have passed away for some other reason, and it's being concealed rather than someone and I'm not saying that to defend anyone, by the way. I don't know the
No, absolutely, that is
but
the case.
It is also possible that he died and his death was concealed, as well as he also could have been murdered.
Yeah, so the guards are carrying out a murder inquiry, but in murder inquiries, in some of these murder cases, the investigation team comes to the conclusion that the person wasn't actually murdered, that they died in some other way, maybe accidentally, maybe some kind of injury sustained in an incident that wasn't intended to kill a person, or so on. So, you know, that avenue can't be completely ruled out, and it can't be completely ruled out in this case precisely because they just don't know what happened. Mm-hmm. They assume that he is dead. There's a murder inquiry underway, but the manner in which he died, whether he was killed or whether it was, you know, some other way, really, they haven't confirmed that yet. The Gardaí haven't confirmed that yet.
You would imagine that there are people that were located in this house at this time, Conor, that may have information. Are they, do we know, because I haven't seen this really referenced, are they cooperating with Gardaí? Are the Gardaí in contact with them? I don't know who exactly was living in the home, but certainly the mother was living in the home. But do we know if they are, as I say, still, are they offering any information or assistance to An Garda Síochána?
Well, they have been spoken to by the guards. You know, some of the people are around Kieran. They have been spoken to by An Garda Síochána, both in Ireland and in England. Some of them are actually in the UK now, and Gardaí have actually travelled there to speak to them. Others are still in the Drogheda Dundalk area. They have been spoken to as well. But really, despite having had those conversations with those people, you know, Gardaí are still not able to establish even when Kieran was last, you know, the last confirmed sighting of him, when he was last alive, even approximately what time of the year he was alive. So even though those conversations have taken place, information that the Gardaí would, you know, in other cases would find very easy to obtain really hasn't been obtainable here.
And just very finally, Conor, and I know this is probably one of those situations that even reliable sources are keeping tight lipped, but is it still the contention by Kyron's mother or those around him that he fled and is missing somewhere?
Well, we don't, to be honest with you, we don't really know that. The missing persons inquiry was stood down last week. Obviously, the alert went out when the missing persons report was received in late August. Within a few days, Gardaí sent out their first alert, you know, appealing for anybody who had information on the whereabouts of Kyron or his mum to come forward. And, you know, a major criminal investigation was put in place very, very quickly. The missing persons report was stood down last week because Kyron's mom was tracked down in the UK, and essentially because the Gardaí could find no evidence that Kyron was alive around at the end of August, when it was claimed he was alive and he'd left the area. You know, all of that... The answers to the questions you ask are still not known by the guards. I mean, that's the short answer.
Yep. No, Conor, I appreciate that. Conor Lally, Irish Times security and crime editor, and you can read Conor's coverage and continued coverage in that newspaper. Thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye. That's Conor Lally there. And just me speaking personally, separate to that conversation, if it's not in place, the one thing that needs to happen right away, as far as I'm concerned, is that... if a child moves from a school, for whatever reason, it could be, you know, I could decide that I want to live in Cork or something. But if a child is no longer in school, there should definitely be something in place where there are two welfare checks, you know, 3 months after the child was last at school, you know, and maybe 18 months or a year afterwards, something along those lines. If that's not in place, it should definitely be in place. If a child doesn't turn up for school, even if the parents say, right, we're moving somewhere else, there should definitely be welfare checks on that child, you know, 6 months later or a year later or something, to avoid something like this happening. If that's not in place, it certainly should. That's certainly one thing I would draw from everything that we're learning. We were contacted by a parent that, let me see where the comment is. All right, we actually got a couple of communications from parents who were annoyed that their young children were coming home from childcare with nails painted. In the case of our listener, the dad apparently was very annoyed. The young boy came home another day wearing girls' clips in his hair. And this parent says, I feel strongly that the play school should not be the place for this, and it should not happen until agreed by us parents. And I noticed too on Letterkenny Babies, there was another comment. I just wonder, does anyone know why play schools are painting boys' nails and encouraging them to be feminine? My child came home last Tuesday with nails painted and wearing a handmade girly bracelet and said the teacher said it's for boys and girls, not just boys. I'm not sure how I feel about it, but my husband's furious about it. He thinks children should be taught at an early age that there is a difference in male and female, and they are not the same, and on it goes. Teresa Gallen is manager of TT Childcare, which is not the childcare centre that we're talking about, and joins us on the programme now. Hi, Teresa.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm okay. Right. So, as I say, this is sort of blown up. We've had a number of contacts, and it's appeared elsewhere. Is this sort of the tact of one particular childcare facility, or is this quite normal?
Greg, this is totally normal. So it is. This happens every day in play. At the end of the day, these children are playing. Children learn through real-life experiences. So I am sure that wee boy has a mammy, sisters, granny, auntie that goes maybe and gets their nails painted or goes and gets their hair done. And it's not a gender activity to that wee boy. All he's doing is doing what mammy does. And he's just seeing getting his nails painted. It's colour and it's fun and it's learning. And also we have like a curriculum or ASTRA curriculum. And there's a big part of that about identity and belonging. And that's all about letting the child have their own interests and see who they are. It's not, you know, this is like telling a wee girl, oh, you can't go and play with the cars or the tractors because you're a girl. You know, that wee boy might end up being a hairstylist. You know what I mean? It's just, I think it's the adults are seeing it as a gender thing where children are just playing. They're just having fun and exploring. That's
but
all they're doing.
It's a very formative time. Like, I don't see your analogy there, because this is not the young boys playing with dolls or playing with the kitchen set or stuff that probably wrongly is attributed to sort of female gender. Some would see this as the feminization of the children, putting girls' hair clips in, painting their nails. That's not really challenging gender roles, is it? That's actually sort of, a physical feminization, some would see it.
They might see it, but all what we are trying to say is that's what they see happening in their everyday life. They don't see it as a girl thing or a boy thing. They just see that this is what happens. They just see people go and get their hair done. You know, they don't see it as a feminization. You know, it's just they're just playing. They're just exploring their world. I mean, like, I know what you're trying to say, but I think that's, as the adults, we're viewing it that way, but you have to look at it as the children. They're just experiencing everyday experiences, what they see happening in mm-hmm. everyday life.
Is it possible, though, Teresa, and listen, say, for instance, and we're not getting into the wider conversation, but often, often if you hear of someone's trans story, for an example, right, they will talk about, I knew from 2 or 3 or 4 that I was a girl. I used to do my nails. I used to do my hair, right? We have to make sure, though, that we're not confusing the very young mind, don't we? Because we also have to give them some credit to understand that mommy is a woman and girl, and mommy wears clips in her hair and paints her nails, and daddy, in most cases, doesn't. Are we sure we're not sort of, maybe we do need to give them a little bit of guidance in that regard?
But we're chatting about 2, 3, 4 year olds, Greg.
Yeah.
So we're not chatting as they go on. And if a child does know that, why would you be excluding them if that's what they want to do? I mean, like, I'm sure we're all parents listening here, and would they not be more annoyed if they come up and said, oh, like, there was a spa day happening in the crèche and their child couldn't get to do it. They were excluded because you were a boy and mommy or daddy didn't want that.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
And this is part of the guidelines, the teaching, is it to let them explore?
Yes.
Explore,
yeah. That's your curriculum framework. That's a big part of it. Regulation 19 of our regulations, identity, health, well-being of a child, that you can't exclude a child. And, like, no child is being forced. We have to remember that. It's not like you're taking them on saying, you are getting your nails painted today. The child's showing an interest. That's all. No, it's happening throughout the day. And if the child wants to get it done, they'll get it done. But they're not being forced to do it. They're showing the interest. They're leading the play here.
Right, but you don't see it as influence then. So say, for instance, there was someone working in this environment that was a trans male, a trans female, for an example. Would you not be concerned that there'd be potentially influenced by that, if that makes sense?
I don't think so. I mean, like, no, I can't see. They're going to see this all over the world, so why is it they're being influenced by what maybe one person in a setting? And we have to promote that it's okay for people to be trans at the end of the day. So if children are getting to see that that's okay from the age of 2 and 3, we're going to help promote better relationships as the world moves forward. We're only exposing them. We're not sitting down teaching them. We're only introducing them to things.
Okay. I think parents, though, probably would want to know this, though, Teresa, because not everyone would think necessarily that this should be encouraged in this environment.
Oh,
you say it's okay to be trans. I mean, of course it is, right? But I mean, if you look, it's a wider conversation I don't want to get into now, right? But there's a very small percentage of people that would identify us as trans or become trans.
Yeah.
That being said, if you present it as it's perfectly okay, and here you are at 2 or 3 or 4, potentially beginning your journey with nail painting and hair clips, you know, and you present this as an option, that could confuse already confused children.
Yeah, but we're not presenting it. We're not deciding. The adult is not coming in and doing plans and saying, right, we are going to today take out nail polish. This is coming from children's interest. You know what I'm trying to say? It's not us deciding
this. Why is nail polish in this environment where we want girls to go into STEM projects, right, you know, and become scientists, and we want fellas maybe to pursue. Why are we bringing in sort of gender-specific things like nail polish to begin with then? Why not leave it
because there's children exploring that, and they're living through their real life experiences, and that's what they want to be doing. At the same time, so that's like us saying, well, why are we bringing in STEM? You have to bring in everything in a child's world. and let them experience them experiences. Not all children get the opportunity to experience these things.
Okay.
And it's only an experience, they're only playing. And I mean, like, I just find it unreal that there's such hardships in this world at the minute with children in poverty, with children in homelessness, and we're sitting talking about a wee boy getting his nails painted at the end of the day.
Yeah, but we also have to consider this. It's a very, very tough time for teenagers. There's more teenagers identifying now as gender other than male and female. There's a lot of mental health issues. We also have to make sure, because I think it's actually really important, we also have to make sure that we are doing the right thing for our children. And that's not to say trans is bad. I'm not saying that for a second. But I think it's actually really quite important to make sure we're getting it right, because we as adults have the ultimate responsibility. But I understand precisely where you're coming from, Teresa, and I do appreciate...
I would say, Greg, with us, if we were doing something like a spade, the parents are always informed, so they are, you know, we all say, oh no, we're having a wee spade day, so the parents will know that it's happening. But at the end of the day, if a child comes up and says they want to get their nails painted or their hair done or whatever, we're not going to exclude them, so we're not. No, them days are gone. And like, so you're hoping it's not going to influence.
So if a young lad watches the girls getting their hair done with clips and nail polish, and they come and say, "Can I get that done?" That's okay.
That's okay, but you're not going to force them to do
it.
Of course, obviously, you know what I mean. But if they want to get it done, they can get it done. And I just like, you know, that parent, how would they feel if their child was excluded or their child was upset because he says, "I don't want that done." You know, what would you rather have, your child there brokenhearted because they couldn't get to do what they wanted to do just to keep the adults happier? You know, you just have to look at it from that. But I appreciate where everybody's coming from.
And listen,
but from our stance, it's all about inclusiveness.
Okay, right. And if they say there was one of the girls' jackets there that was clearly a female's jacket and the young fella says, "Oh, can I put that jacket on as well?" That would be okay also.
That's okay, and vice versa. If it was a blue Subaru jacket, we'll take for example, and a wee girl wanted to wear it, that's okay. But nobody would question that.
Okay. Teresa, listen.
That would be okay.
I get exactly where you're coming from. Teresa, thanks so much for your time. I do appreciate it. Teresa Gallen there, manager of TT Childcare. Any views on that? 0860 25000 or give us a call on 07491 25000.